Hello everyone. Thank you so much for joining us live on the webinar, Failing to Attract New Customers and Retain the Old Ones. Understand what you are missing. My name is Evita and I handle customer experience here at SurveySparrow. So for those of you who don't know about SurveySparrow, this is a conversational survey platform that guarantees about 40% higher survey completion rates. We help businesses to converse better with their customers and understand their expectations effortlessly through our surveys. So I'm super excited today to have Gordon Treadgold here. For those of you who don't know Gordon, he is the CEO of Leadership Principles LLC, a business IT transformation expert. He's also an international keynote speaker recognized by Inc. Magazine Top 100 Leadership Expert and Speaker. Gordon is also the author of the critically acclaimed FAST, Four Principles Every Business Needs to Achieve Success and Drive Results, which is a finalist for Management Book of the Year 2007. Welcome, Gordon.
Thank you for having me.
So, guys, before we begin, I'd like to let everyone know that you can put up all of your questions here on the clipboard, and we'll do our best to answer them during this session. In case our hour is up, and we are not able to address them, we'll definitely have them answered and sent over to your email. So don't forget to leave your email ID with us. I really promise not to spam you right down. Okay, so over to you, Gordon. It's all yours now.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming and joining us. And today we're going to talk about the why we fail to attract and attract new customers and retain old ones. And I'm going to talk about the FAST approach, which is something that I've used to help companies drive revenue and increase their operational performance. And I wanted to start off by covering one of the reasons why businesses fail, because this is partly why I came up with FAST, but I also think it's a good indication of why we fail to first attract customers and then return them. So this slide is about why companies fail, and this is the CBS insights into why tech startup companies fail. And they did a survey of a lot of companies, and what they did was they found that the number one reason why startups fail, and this is going to be why we fail to attract customers, the number one reason, and it impacts 42% of companies, startup companies, is because they had the wrong product. So if you've got the wrong product, if you're not selling something that the market needs, then you're not going to be able to attract customers. Another of the key reasons why companies failed was the wrong pricing, and that affected 18% of the startup companies. So yes, you might have a product that the market wants, but the price is incorrect. Either it's going to be too expensive, or it's not going to be a price point that is going to allow you to be profitable. Some of the other reasons why the startup companies fail, and these link a little bit into FAST, which is about focus, accountability, simplicity, and transparency. One of them we can see right there is that lack of transparency. People are run out of cash. They didn't have the visibility into how long it was going to take for their company to become profitable, how much money they would need, or it could be that they didn't have visibility into profitability. I worked with one company, and they were selling products that they were generating $30,000 a month in revenue, but they were making around 5% in terms of profit, which was generating them an income which they could have bettered if they'd have worked at Starbucks doing 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. So we need to have that transparency into our pricing. Another reason, which again comes back to the FAST approach, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is the wrong team. If you've got the wrong people involved, this can actually cause us to underperform. And then the last one I just wanted to point out there, which we talk about, user unfriendly products is that we lack simplicity. We've made it too complicated for customers, and this can be that our product's too complicated, or we're a difficult entity to deal with. And in today's world, people want solutions. They don't want to find themselves in difficulty with the companies that they deal with. This is why Amazon is so popular, because they're a one-click company. You make one click and the sale's done. So we need to make sure that if we want to run our own businesses, we avoid these problem areas, because these are what are going to cause us to fail. And when we look at how do we drive our business, there's actually only three areas. There's actually, if we want to attract new customers, and this comes back to that, you know, being easy to work with, we've got to be easy to find. Our companies, people have got to be able to find us easily. They have to understand what it is we do. We have to understand what our value proposition is. And I've worked with a lot of businesses, and when I ask them, what's your value proposition? They say, I sell this product. But selling a product is not a value proposition. We've got to be selling solutions. We've got to be adding value. And this was something that I really struggled with when I first got into the business that I'm in, which is, you know, consulting with businesses, but also doing leadership coaching. People would ask me, what do you do? And I would say, I do leadership coaching. And guess how many people think they need leadership coaching? You can count them on the fingers of one finger. Very few people. And I had to change my value proposition to be, I help companies drive profit and revenue. And when people see that as what the value is that you offer, they can see that as something that they need, and that makes you more attractive to them as a business. Nobody wants products. People are looking for solutions. And then the other thing that we need to do to make sure that we can attract customers is we need to be simple to do business with. And this, a lot of people, when they look at simplicity, they get this the wrong way around. They think that it needs to be simple for them, but actually it's got to be simple for the customer. It needs to be simple for us as well, because if we make it too complicated to do business ourselves, that can drive cost up, which can kill our profitability and viability of our products. But we've got to be simple to do business with. I want to tell you a little story about somebody. I went to see a speaker who did a fantastic job, and they were talking about how to get published in one of the leading online magazines, and I was really interested in doing that at the time. So at the end of the talk, they said they were offering a webinar course that would teach you how to do that, and it was $149, and they were guaranteed that they would get you into the top two publications. And I thought, yeah, that's great, I would love to write for those magazines. So I went down and they gave me the form to sign, and I gave them my credit card, and they said to me, oh, we don't take credit cards. I said, what do you mean? You know, your course is $147, I want to buy it. Here's my credit card. They said, no, we don't take credit cards. All we do is we take PayPal or cash. So if you've got a PayPal account, you know, then go online now and email us. And I said, well, I don't have access to go online. I don't use PayPal from my iPhone, which, you know, this was about 5 years ago. I didn't do that at that time. So I said, I can't do that. And they said, well, do you know somebody else who's got a PayPal account and you can pay them by credit card? And I was thinking, why are you making it so difficult for me to do business with you? Why don't you accept every form of payment? Why should it be my problem to find a way to pay you? I have a credit card. I want to use a credit card, but you don't want to do that. And what they said to me was, well, if you come, we're going to be back in a month's time. If you come back then, we'll take credit cards at that point. And I said, thank you very much. No problem. And I actually went and did some research on the internet, and I found somebody else who offered that same course who took credit cards, and I went with them. So when we're looking at attracting new customers, we've got to make ourselves simple and easy to find. If we can't find it, if we can't find you, then there's no chance of them actually being attracted to us. And I think I read a statistic about Australia where less than 54% of businesses have a website, which is not a good sign. So we've got to be simple and easy to find. We've got to have a simple value proposition that the customers can understand. If they can understand the value we bring to them, they're more likely to be attracted and do the work. And then lastly, we've got to be simple to do business with. The reason why retention of customers is important is because there's a lot of studies. If you go and Google cost of retention, you'll find lots of articles, and there are just two that I picked up, two of the graphics where it talks about it's five times more expensive to find a new customer than it is to sell to an existing customer. There's another one that said it was 6 to 7 times more expensive to find a new customer than an existing customer. And all of that customer acquisition cost eats into our profitability. So new customers, whilst it's great to be growing our customer base, it doesn't do a great deal for our profit margin because the cost is a great deal more. And when you look at, I think there was a study by the Harvard Business Review, they even claimed it was 25 times more expensive. Now, I don't believe it's that high. I'm not even sure that it's 6 or 7 times higher, but it's definitely more costly to find new customers than to retain and resell to our existing customers. So if we want to drive profit, and we want to drive good growth, retaining our existing customers and leveraging those is a great way of doing business. Secondly, another great way of growing and keeping customer acquisition costs down is via referrals. And I think it was, there was a statistic that I read online. I think it was 85% of people are more likely to buy if they've been referred by somebody. So we need to have that customer retention focus, because if we're focused on returning customers, we'll be focused on giving great customer service, and that great customer service will be then something that they can use to then go and refer us to their network, their friends, their family, so that we can then get their referral clients. So we have to have that customer retention mindset, because we want to sell to our existing customers and we want to sell to their networks. And we do that by having a retention and a great service quality mindset. If you've got any questions as I'm going through, because I'm going through this quite quickly, just put them up and I'll try and answer them as they come up. Or if I'm going to cover it a little bit later, I'll leave that, or we'll just take care of them at the end. The last thing we need to do when we talk about customer retention is we need to understand the cost of our customers. Now, I didn't put this chart in, but it's a simple quadrant diagram. What we need to understand for each of our customers, we need to plot them on a cost of doing business with them and a revenue potential. And those customers that are easy to do business with and are a good source of potential revenue, we should really spend a lot of time and energy on marketing to those customers. And to those customers who basically are a pain in the butt, customers that are complaining all the time, where there's possibly little to no chance of doing additional business, we need to know who they are so that we don't invest too much time trying to retain them, because expensive customers are bad for our business. And in fact, we should maybe even look to think about firing those customers. Customers who cost more than the revenue we bring in, we need to think about those and possibly look at getting rid of them. Okay, so that's customer retention. It's more expensive to find new customers than to retain existing customers. And we want to get into that customer mindset, that service mindset, so that we can not only retain them, but leverage them for referrals into their network, because that's going to be our lowest path of growth, both in terms of revenue by doing resales, but also selling to their referrals, because that will keep our cost of new customer acquisition down. So now I just wanted to go over FAST, because FAST is a process that I look at with businesses to try and help them drive growth. And the FAST process is something that I came up with when I was working in as a project turnaround expert. And what I found was that there are four reasons why businesses fail, four reasons why projects fail. And this is because of a lack of focus. We don't know what our goal or objective is. We don't know what our, we don't know who's involved. Lack of accountancy. We don't know about the how we're going to achieve it. We don't know what's the simplest way to do things. We tend to overcomplicate things, or we have a lack of transparency. And transparency is about truth and knowledge. It's the truth of what's in the knowledge of what's involved. So for a business, how long is it going to take before we become profitable? What do we know? What our profit margin is and our cost of customer acquisition. And it's about the truth of our performance. We need to be honest with ourselves. Are we growing our business? Because, you know, we've got to, it's great to persist, but at a point at which we realize we're not doing great, we need to maybe make a decision to just decide, okay, let's go in a different direction. So that's what FAST is. It's about focus, making sure that we have the right what, the right goal, know what success looks like. Accountability, we've got the right people involved. We know what their roles are. We've communicated to them. We've kept it as simple as possible, and we have that transparency. And FAST has helped me work with companies, triple their revenue, increase performance by 50 to 500%. At one company, it allowed me to save them $140 million in operational cost savings. We did a project that where the goal was to save $210 million, and I got that up to $350 million by making sure that we had that right focus, accountability, simplicity, and transparency. But it's also an approach that's helped me become a top 25 leadership expert, write three books, 1,200 articles in 4 years, build an online following of $500,000, and run 12 marathons. So FAST is a process that you can use for your business, projects, and your personal goals. So I'll just ask if there's any questions about that. Am I going too fast? Do you need a little bit more detail? If you've got anything, just type the questions in, and I'll look to answer them. So if the market's a niche, what's the steps to ensure the right pricing? So I think what we've got to do is we've got to make sure that we do the market research. Go and find out who your competitors are, look at them, and then see what the pricing is. And one of the things about pricing is that in niche markets, we can actually charge them a much higher price. But we have to understand the value that we're going to bring. You know, if I'm coaching a business and I'm going to treble its revenue, then that allows me to charge a higher price. So I need to know what the value is that I'm bringing. And certainly when I deal with a lot of coaches, they tend to think about cost. You know, my hourly coaching rate, you know, I can only charge you $200 an hour because that's really, you know, it's the cost of my time. But actually, when you're doing a coaching, the value you're bringing, for me, when I do coaching, because I'm bringing 30 years of corporate experience and boiling it down, the benefits into a one-hour session to help drive your business. Now, whilst the cost might only be a couple of hundred dollars, the value can be significant. I worked with one business where in a two-hour period, I helped them save 400,000 euros. So we need to understand the value that we bring and then price accordingly. If you bring a value of $10, you can't charge $100 for the product. If you're bringing a value of $1,000, then you can charge $100, $200 for the product. Does that make sense? Okay, thank you, Shiv. So I just want to now come back to FAST. So FAST is about focus. It's about what's our goal, what's our objective, what does success look like, and are we focused on the right thing? Because if we're focused on the right wrong thing, it doesn't matter how good a job we do if it's the wrong thing. If we built the wrong product or we're selling it to the wrong market, we're going to fail. So when we think about our products, we have to be asking ourselves, is our product viable? Not can we make it, but is it viable? And if you're not sure whether it's viable, ask yourself this, excuse me, does it solve a problem? Does it meet a need that people have? I found this great picture of hand pants, underpants for your hands. Very funny, very nice. I'm not convinced there's a market for that. I wouldn't invest in those. So even though we might think an idea is a great idea, if it's not bringing value, if it's not solving a problem someday, it's probably not going to have great market penetration and sustainability. So we need to make sure that our product has a viable market, and we can go and do market research. I worked with a company on online training programs, and they had lots of great ideas for training courses. But what we did with that company was, for every training course, we created a mock-up of what that training course would be. We created an outline of the agenda, and then we marketed that course. And if we sold a significant number of seats on that training, and we sold it, this training will be happening in 2 to 3 months' time. If we sold enough seats, then we would go and create that training. And a lot of people, what they were doing was they were creating the training and then trying to sell it. You need to know whether there is a market for your product. If there's no market for your product, it doesn't matter how great the product is, you are not going to be successful in selling it. We also need to know who our target customers are. And one of the things that I hear with a lot of clients when I ask them, who's the market for this? And they say, oh, everybody could use it. That's brilliant that you've got a product that can you be used by anybody and everybody. But now, how are you going to market it? Because you can't use the same marketing for everybody. You can't use the same marketing for baby boomers and Gen Xers and millennials. You've got to know what your market is. You've got to narrow it down so that you can then get your marketing very specific. You need to create that avatar of your ideal customer, because once you know your ideal customer and you know them well, then it allows us to not only target our marketing a lot better, but also target the product a little bit better. I'm going back to the question from Sri. How do we market? How do we price in a niche market? If you know your target market, let's say you've got a product that could work for everybody, but you're now going to target it at CEOs, and you're going to sell the value and the benefit to CEOs. If you know what the CEO salary is, you can get an idea of the kind of money that they would pay, and then you can price it for that market. And that would be a completely different pricing if you're going to be selling that product to students. So we need to know our target market. To market it to everybody is the same as marketing it to nobody. We also need to know who are our competitors. Why do we need to know that? Because we need to know if there are no competitors as one of two things. One, we've come up with a brilliant idea and we're the first to market, or maybe there is no market. And if we find our competitors, we can look at what the products that they're offering, the price point, the quality, how do we compare? Because if we're providing a Me Too product into a market that our competitors are offering, what we can't do is we can't offer it at double the price. We have to be price competitive because these are our competitors. Or we need to find a way to differentiate and make our product more attractive, which will then allow us to charge a higher price. Or if we can undercut them because we found a way of doing it cheaper, then we can be more competitive by having a more competitive price. So we need to know who our competitors are, and then all that leads into understanding the market price for our product. So is our product viable? What does the value it bring? Who's our target market? What a salary band are they in? What kind of disposable income they have? What would they pay for the product? What are our competitors doing in that space? What are they charging? And we need to factor all that in so that we can get our pricing right. Get our pricing right, that's going to make us attractive to the market and allow us to drive growth. Get it wrong, and it's going to kill our business. Also on pricing, what we have to think about is, what's our pricing for retained customers? So we might be selling it for $100, but when we do a second sale to existing customers, given that cost of acquisition is lower by, you know, factor 5, factor 7, whatever the stat is that's accurate on that, we can actually offer a 10% discount or a 15% discount and still make good margin. So we need to understand how we're going to price it, one, for the initial sale, and then secondly, if we're starting to do sales to returned customers. So that's focus. It's about the what, the product, our market, our product, our pricing. So the next part is having the right team. This is about accountability, and accountability is about the who's involved. Do they know their role? Have we communicated our expectations? Have we given them the tools in order to do the job? Hi, John. Sorry. Yeah, it looks like you have a question.
I think John's typing a question. Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest red flag when it comes to customer churn? That's a great question. So I think customer churn, we have to understand what customer churn is, because it might just be that our products are one and done. You know, the selfie stick. Nobody ever buys two selfie sticks. So you're only going to get one transaction there with your customers. So we need to understand what a customer life cycle looks like. And then we have to understand, is our churn in line with that customer life cycle, or is it out of norm? And if it's out of norm, then we've got bad churn. Then the question is, look at what causes that. And more often than not, what I find is that customer churn, there's two components to it. There's experience, what's it like doing business with us, but there's also outcome. And when you look at outcome, a lot of companies are looking at customer experience. We've got to have a great customer experience, got to have a great customer experience. Yet two of the most profitable airline companies in the world, Spirit in the US and Ryanair in Europe, are the worst airlines. They rank dead last in customer experience. But what they do is they get people to the destination they want cheaply. So people are not getting the value, the outcome they were expecting. And we need to focus on making sure that our products and services deliver outcome. And certainly when I see a lot of people in the coaching space that I speak to a lot, they get a lot of churn because people come in, do their coaching, but then don't see the benefit and then quit. So it's all about delivering the benefit, people getting the output, the outcomes that they're looking for. Does that answer your question? I'll assume it was. So the next part is about accountability. It's about the who, and do we have the right team? Have we given them the right tools? Have we set the right expectations for them? And when it comes to having the right team, we've got to make sure that we have people working both in the business, which is doing the job. So if you're selling knitted hats, you've got to have people making the knitted hats and producing the product, but you've got to have people working on the business. You've got to have people doing business development, doing the sales, looking for leads, looking for new customers, looking for new clients, because without sales, there is no business. Second thing we need to do is we need to make sure that our team understand the business goals and the objectives, because I see a lot of people with teams, and I worked with one lady, and she was doing events where she was having 200 people excuse me, turn up to her event. And the following year, she said to me, my goal is to have 1,000 people. And I said to her, have you told your team this? And she said, no, why should I? I said, because your team are the ones that are going to help you do it. And you got 200 last year, 200 the year before. So when you get close to 200 this year, people are going to think, great, we're on track. But if your goal is 1,000 people, you've got to tell them that. So they know what success looks like. They can know, are we doing a good job? Are we on track? And then the last thing is, have we been clear to them about what our expectations are, and have we empowered them? If we don't empower people, then we're putting them in a position where we want them to take ownership, but we don't give them the tools to do so, in which case they just become a process follower. And people that follow process never deliver excellent or outstanding service, because they just do as they're told. And when things go badly, if that normal process won't fix it, they'll just keep following the normal process. We've got to be able to empower people. And one of the best ways to empower them and to get them to take ownership is to ask them, do you have what you need in order to be successful and deal with any situation that comes up? If they say yes, great, boom, they're empowered. If they say no, then we need to look to give them what they need if we want them to be empowered. What are the top three qualities I should look for when hiring and building a team? Okay, Emma, the top three qualities I look for when hiring people are attitude, aptitude. And sometimes I even say attitude, because we can always teach people skills, but it's difficult to teach attitude. You want people that are committed, that have got drive, that are going to show initiative, that want to be successful. And for me, that is absolutely paramount. And yet we also need them to have the skills as well. But if I have a choice between somebody with the right attitude and the right skills and the wrong attitude, I'll take attitude every single day of the week. We want people who are forward thinking, who are positive, who are committed, and who will go that extra mile to drive the business. And there are plenty of people out there. One of the things that I really hate reading about over and over is people talking about millennials and how they feel entitled and they don't want to do a job. For me, that's BS. I've worked with a lot of millennials who've got a great attitude. So there are plenty of people out there with the right attitude who want to do a good job, who want to be successful. Go and find them, and then, you know, pay them above market rate, and you'll look to keep them and retain them. Great customer service starts with great employee engagement, and great employee engagement starts with great employees and great experience. So go and get the people with the right attitude, give them the tools they need, pay them above market average, and they'll give you a great return on that investment. Does that answer your question, Emma? Cool. So the next thing we want to be talking about is transparency. And transparency is about truth and knowledge. And we have to remember, when we're trying to run a business, it's not just about revenue. Revenue is great, but we've got to be looking about profitability. So we have to have transparency into what our costs are. As I say, I was working with one business, and they were doing 30,000 a month. And when I came to join them, they told me what they want me to do was they want me to help them drive their business to 50,000 a month in revenue, because they felt that that was doable. They got to 30,000 in 3 months, and they wanted to make it to 30,000 a month in 3 months, and they wanted to be at 50,000 a month by the end of the year. And they asked me, could I help? And I said, sure, but before we do that, let me ask you a question. What's your profit margin? And they said, not entirely sure. And I said, well, don't you think we should find out while whether we're making a profit or not before we grow? Because if you're doing 30,000 a month and making a loss, the last thing you want to do is to go to 50,000 because you're nearly going to double your loss. And I experienced this at a multinational company where we had a massive sales drive and we sold products where we had limited visibility and transparency into our profitability. It was a parcel delivery company and we had so many partners that we knew what we were selling it for. But because of all of the partners, we didn't know what our partner costs were. And all the sales staff were incentivized on revenue. And they gave discounts and we sold and we went crazy on sales. And at the end of that year, we lost 1.6 billion in profit. That was our end of year number, 1.6 billion. We'd taken our market share from 5 to 10%, but we had done it all at a loss and we lost $1.5 billion. So we've got to have that visibility. And with this company, when I was working with them, when we looked at their products, what we found was that 50% their products were made up of different components. And depending on the component mix, they could be making 5% profit, which on 30,000 a month would give them $1,500 profit per month, or 50% profit, which would then give them 15,000. So I said, look, before we start looking at doubling your profit, what we need to do is we need to look at weeding out all of the products that we're selling where we're only making a 5% profit, because at 5% profit, it's hardly worth doing. As I say, you might as well go get a job at Starbucks. You'll earn $1,500 a month there for significantly less work. So what we did was we actually focused on getting everybody onto about a 40% profit, a blended profit margin overall, and that dropped their revenue down to 20,000. But what we actually did was we drove up their profitability. So at 20,000 they were making 8,000 a month profit, whereas before they were only making around 3,000 to 4,000 a month profit. Then once we had that solid financial base, 20,000 in revenue and 8,000 in profit, we could then look at doubling the business and getting to 40,000, which would then give us 16,000 a month profit, which is a great business. So we've got to have that transparency into profitability. We need to know what our costs are. We need to know what our cash flow is. We need to know what the cost of finance is. We need to know what the margins are. We need to think about tax, because when we're looking at pricing, we need to make sure we're pricing it with profit and take-home pay in mind. And we need to be thinking about what's our time investment. Because if we're working 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week, and we're giving the work away fairly low price, we might end up finding that we're only working for $5, $6, $7 an hour because of the pricing that we're doing. So we've got to have that visibility into the costs so that when we set a price, we know it's going to be profitable for our business. We don't want to be in business. We want to be in profitable business. And every business needs to have financial sales targets. I worked with one company and they said, you know, we're going to look to double our revenue in 2 to 4 years. And I said, well, you have to pick one of those two targets, because we've got to put a plan in place. And the plan to double your revenue in 4 years is a 25% growth every year. The plan to grow your business in 2 years is a 50% growth every year. Now, those are two completely different plans, and we've got to pick one, because only when we pick one can we put a plan in place, and then can we track our performance against that plan and say whether the work we're doing, the work we did today, is a good day or not. You know, if we want to make a million a year and we're selling products at $1,000 each, we've got to be selling 1,000 products. So that's 50 weeks a year. That means we've got to be selling 200 products a week, which means we've got to be selling 40 products a day. When you've got that transparency into what we need to do to achieve our financial goal, we can ask ourselves, did we sell 40 today? If we did, good job, pat on the back, let's go forward. If not, what are we going to do to change it? So we have to have transparency. clear financial targets so we know what the plan is of what we need to do in order to be successful. And then we need to know, and because that'll tell us how many sales we need to make and are we on track or not. And then we need to have that visibility into both cost as well as pricing so we can be sure that we are not selling our products at a loss. Selling your products at a loss is the fastest way to bankrupt known to man. Any questions on transparency? Okay, let's move on to the next slide, which I think is simplicity. I'm a huge fan of simplicity, and we talked about that before, about we've got to be simple to do business with, we've got to be simple to find, we've got to be easy to do business with, take any kinds of payments. What I wanted to talk here was about simplicity of driving revenue. There are only three ways that we can drive revenue. And when I ask businesses how many ways to drive revenue, they say, oh, there's hundreds. No, there's actually only three ways to drive our revenue. One is to sell our products for a higher price. So if you sell 100 units at 10 euros, sell 100 units at 11 euros, you've increased your price. We need to sell to more people. So we need to find more new customers. That will drive our revenue growth. And then the only other way of driving revenue is to sell more products to our existing customers. And the reason why I say this, because if you want to drive revenue, these are the only three ways you can do it. And as a business owner, you need to have a strategy for each one of those. We need to understand how we're going to drive and add value to our products so we can start to sell it for more money. And as our products start to become in demand, we might want to look to increase our pricing. We talked earlier about niche products. How do I price it? I have a friend who offered some niche coaching, and she was selling it at $200 an hour. And I think she offered 10 places on a coaching scheme, and they sold out in a day. That's great, but it also tells me that the pricing was a little bit too low. So if you see that you've got great attraction, you might want to be thinking about, okay, this is great value and I need to increase the product. But we should always be thinking about how can I increase the value of the product in order to increase the price, because that's one way of driving revenue. Second way is find more customers. And as we said earlier, this is the most expensive way to drive revenue because the cost of new customer acquisition is 5 to 7 times higher than customer retention and sales to existing customers. So that third way of selling more products to our existing customers is the only other way to drive revenue. So we've got to have these three strategies as part of our business. And I put it this way because I want to keep it simple, because when it's simple, people can understand it. When they can understand it, they can go and do it. But you've got to have strategies. And if you don't think you can sell your product for more money, then you've got to focus on selling it to more people and then selling more products. But these are the only three ways you can drive revenue. And we have to have a set strategy for each of them. Any questions on that? I know I went through that quite quickly, and it is yeah, go on, Sri. It is quite a powerful lesson. So you have to differentiate. So the question is, what would be a great strategy to sell higher price if your competition is already cheap and market leader? Grey Goose Vodka, that came in and said, we're the premium brand vodka, and they charge a higher price for their vodka. Now, I'm not a vodka drinker, so I can't tell you whether it's a better quality or not, but that's the only way you can price it higher, is to differentiate yourself as a premium brand. I did some work with an Amazon seller, and what they did was they went through Amazon, developed some tools that searched for products that had great sales but poor reviews. And what they did was they went in and they looked at the poor reviews. There was one product he found, which was a particular type of leather belt. And when he looked at the reviews were around 3, 3.5. And the problem was that the belt buckle kept snapping, one of the leather straps on it kept snapping. So what he did was he took the design, went and found somebody who could manufacture the exact same belt buckle but with a higher quality, and then sold that on Amazon, and completely took that market away. Sold it for about 10% more, but it constantly got 5% reviews, and people will pay a little bit more for quality. Is it ethical to sell the same service price at different prices based on the value? Well, I think some people, you could argue that some people, Sri, are underselling it and some people are overselling it. A taxi driver charging $10 from a customer versus 50, say. Oh, you mean when they charge Bill Gates? Well, so this is one of the things that I have a business plan, what I call a fast business planning tool, and I always tell people I have three or four prices. You have a sticker price, so I have a friend who sells coaching at $500 an hour. That's where it says on their website. But they'll actually, if you buy 5 hours with them, they'll sell it at $400 an hour. But if you're a referral, they'll sell it for $350. And if you're a friend and family, they'll sell it for $300. So there's no problem offering a discount to different segments of your market, I don't think, because what you're trying to do is, you're probably not going to give the exact same quality of service to, some guy getting in a cab compared to Bill Gates. You're probably going to be a lot nicer, a lot more polite with Bill Gates. I don't know what you might do, but I don't think pricing it based on what customers will pay, because a lot of people do that. You see that, people like Grant Cardone have courses that are $999, but one day it'll be discounted down to $99. So people are constantly selling products at varying prices. I don't necessarily see it as unethical unless you're going out of your way to scam people. Does that answer your question? Okay, so just going back to fast then, just want to wrap up on this. Thank you, Sri. Just want to come back on fast and just wrap this up. So fast is about focus, accountancy. It says, I mean, accountability, simplicity, and transparency. Accountability is about me taking ownership, and I want to own the fact that I wrote accountancy and not accountability there. Focus is about the what, accountability is about the who, the simplicity is about the how, and the transparency is about knowledge of what's involved and how we're performing. So we need to make sure that we master all those things in our business. And these are just four questions that we need to ask to know whether our business is fast and therefore going to be successful. And that is, that do we have the right focus? Do we know who our target market is? Do we know whether our product is viable? And do we know what the pricing for our product is? Do we have the right team? Do we have people working on the business and in the business? And are they empowered? And then have we kept it simple? Are we easy to do business with? And then the last part is, do we have full financial transparency? Do we know what our financial goals are? Do we know where we are in terms of cash flow? And do we know what our profitability is? And when we've got all of those things covered, then our business is a fast business, and our probability of success being in that 5% that will succeed is significantly higher. So that's fast. Let's just now go to the questions. So there's one here from Christy. When applicable, can you speak on where your plans principles can be applied to a non-profit organization? So do you mean as a customer who deals with a non-profit or a non-profit organization? If it's, how does a non-profit organization deal with fast, then again, you need to be clear about what your goal and objective is. We need to make sure that we have communicated that to our team so they know what it is we're trying to do. We need to make sure we've communicated to them what our expectations are, how we're going to hold them accountable, and make sure we've given them the tools they need in order to be successful. We need to be sure that we've kept things as simple as possible. Simplicity leads to understanding. Understanding leads to execution. Complexity kills execution. And then lastly, transparency. Do we know what our performance is? and do we know what's involved? Because if we know what our performance is and we know what we need to do on a daily basis, then when we do that, we can give our team positive feedback, pat on the back, job well done, all the praise and recognition. And when it isn't, we can then say, okay, what do we need to turn it around? So that's how I would apply it to in a nonprofit organization. If your business is dealing with nonprofit, then you might decide that you want nonprofit pricing. As a speaker, I give a discount if I speak to a not-for-profit organization. If I go and I was approached to go and speak at a charity and I gave them a 50% discount on my standard speaking fee because it was a charity around kidney nephroscopy, which is about, you know, a significant problem with your kidneys. And it was something that, you know, resonated with me. And I thought, okay, it's an opportunity to give back. So I go and give them a discount. Yeah, the thing about simplicity and transparency, Grant, is, well, the thing about focus and accountability, if we're clear about the what and the who, that allows us to increase our effectiveness. Because when we're doing the right thing, every time we apply effort, we're going to move ourselves forward. And simplicity and transparency are about making sure we do the thing right, which increases our efficiency. And if we can increase our effectiveness and our efficiency, this is what allows us to drive and achieve excellence. So that's my fast talk. Very simple, easy to understand, easy to implement. Can be difficult to do because, you know, especially simplicity, a simple plan is not the same as an easy plan. When I was 52, I decided to run my first marathon, and I came up with a simple plan, and that was to just run 15 minutes a day the first week, 20 minutes a day the next week, 25 the week after. Very simple plan, easy to follow, easy to understand, but it still involved me running 5 days a week for 6 months and then running 26 miles on that last day. So didn't make the job easier, but it made it easy to understand how I was going to go from where I was to where I needed to be. Any more questions on any aspects of this or about customer retention, customer attraction?
Gordon, I had one actually myself. So I wanted to understand how quickly, like, have companies been able to implement FAST here?
So FAST, you can actually implement it really, really quickly because you know, two examples. One, I worked with a utilities company who had a billing system, and they wanted to reduce. This was one where they were spending $2 million a year on testing their system. They had quarterly releases. Excuse me. And what they wanted to redo was they wanted to reduce their cost of testing by 20%. But for no negligible impact on testing. And they brought me in and they said to me, you know, can you do this? We'll give you a 30-day contract to help us. And I said, well, okay, let's get some transparency. Tell me how many phases of testing, tell me how much they cost, tell me how effective they are. And within 2 hours, we wrote down there were 5 phases of testing. We knew what the cost was and we could see the effectiveness. And when we wrote that down, we could see that one phase of testing cost 20% and only found 2% of the defects. So if you want to reduce your costing by 20%, boom, stop doing that. So within 2 hours, we identified an area where they could save 20% of their cost, which was $400,000. Just by getting that transparency. People say the devil is in the detail. I always say the opportunity is in the detail, and we have to go in and look at the data. Another company I worked with, who were a social media marketing company, they had 5 different products. And what they did was, in order not to confuse the customers, they created 5 companies, each which offered one of those services. And they brought me in to work with them. And when I looked at the 5 services, I said, so tell me what the difference is between each of the services. And they said, well, there's quite a little bit of overlap. And as I was looking at the services, I said, well, how do I know which one I should go with? And they said, well, you probably understand what your business needed. I said, well, I do a lot of social media marketing, but I'm looking at these five products and I don't understand which one should I use. So we went and did a little bit of market research, and we found that some of their customers had found it difficult to figure out which of the five companies to approach. So what we did was we went with one company with five products. And when we did that, they trebled their revenue in the first 3 months, because customers would then come to them and say, hi, I'm looking for some social media. You have five products. Which one is the right one for me? And then they would have that discussion and they would point them in the right direction. Before, when it was down to the customer identifying, trying to figure out which of the products they were using, and they couldn't do it, they just moved on to the next company. So they had great products, great service, but they made it difficult for customers to figure out which of their products to go with. And when customers struggle to understand your business, they will go with a competitor. And again, we made that, you know, we sat down, we did some consulting, we made that change within a week, and we started to see benefits within the first 2 weeks. And by the end of the first quarter, they trebled the revenue on the comparable quarter the previous year. And at the end of the year, they'd done treble the revenue.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gordon. I think I got that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
So I think it's almost time where we have to wind up. We'll have to cut this right now and we'll come back with the questions. Gordon, thank you so much again. It was a wonderful session. I think I did quite a little bit of learning in the last, I think 1 hour. We did a solid 1 hour and it was amazing for me. I think all of our participants also feel the same. So to all of our participants, we'd like to let you know that this webinar has been recorded. So if anybody is interested in listening to this whole webinar again, we'll be providing you with a link of the recording probably at the soonest by the next week. Along with the recording, we'll also send in the deck that has Gordon's details. And you can also reach out to us, reach out to ServiceSparrow at support@servicesparrow.com. To all of our people again, feel free to share the webinar with your teams, with your people. And we'd be happy to take any more questions and forward them to Gordon as well. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining in and probably engaging with Gordon so pretty well. I think Gordon had a wonderful time with us.
Yeah, thank you. We had a lot to get through, and I hope I wasn't too quick, but I wanted to make sure we covered everything.
I don't think 1 hour is enough for us, Gordon. This is an amazing topic for us to just go on and on, but our time is just way too short. So everyone, thank you guys, see you, and we look forward to seeing you and participating better with you during our next webinar. Okay. Thank you once. Have a great day. Thank you, Gordon. Thank you once again.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.